From inside Camp Randall Stadium, Learfield IMG College presents Behind the Badgers, an exclusive look inside Wisconsin athletics. Here are your hosts, Patrick Herb and Brian Mason.
Podcasting is easy when the Wisconsin football team just keeps steamrolling opponents, isn't it, Brian?
48-0, third shutout in five games. Yeah, I'd say that counts as steamrolling.
So Badger football moves to 5-0, beating the tar out of Kent State and keeping the record perfect. Jonathan Taylor scores five touchdowns, continuing to look like the Heisman front runner that he is. Speaking of Jonathan Taylor, he is our guest on the podcast today. We are really excited. Anytime we get a chance to talk to him, he's just an engaging guy. And today's conversation, no different. You know, we get his take on the Heisman race. We right up front talk to him about that. We meditate with Jonathan Taylor. That's been a big thing in his life these days. And we also heard what he told the team the night before they beat Michigan earlier this season. So stick around, listen to that interview. But can you do us a favor? Can you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts? And if you have a moment, rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate the listenership, and we love doing this, and we hope we can keep it going. We also want you guys to help shape our podcast with feedback and advice that you might have. So drop us an email, behindthebadgers@gmail.com. That's one way to get a hold of us. Another one is you can message us on Twitter. We're at behindbadgers. And we're on Instagram, too, at behindthebadgers. So a lot of ways to get at us. Let's get this going with today's trending topics. The first one, we got to start with what happened Saturday in the annihilation of Kent State. Bigger tests will loom, but for now, let's look back at that one and do a status check on what we learned from Wisconsin in that one. They never trailed again in that game, which they have not trailed all season long. Scored another touchdown on the first drive of the season, which is really interesting because it's put them ahead early and it's helped their offense be able to dictate the way they want to play. And they don't have to rely on anything out of system, out of what they've scripted. And we saw that again, that they just take the ball and dominate right from the start. I think it's put Jack Cohn in a really good position, and he was really efficient again. Didn't have to throw downfield, which was one thing they didn't do a lot against Northwestern. Didn't have to do it against Kent State. And I got the feeling that they were holding some things back that maybe they had in the game plan, but they thought, you know what, we don't need to use those in this game. And I all of those things were really encouraging, in addition to the fact that the defense just was suffocating again. 9 sacks, which is something they haven't done in a long time, and you're seeing playmakers all over the field. We've talked about that on previous weeks. It was a really impressive performance, and for me, it validated and just kind of re-emphasized all the things I already thought I knew about this team. Brian, did you have that feeling, or did you think that you actually learned something from that game?
I think it validated what we've heard from, especially from Chris Orr, but from a lot of guys on the team about this idea of it doesn't matter the name on the jersey of who we're playing. It might as well be a blank jersey because we're approaching every game the same way and making it about what we want to do and what we want to dictate. And you saw it again. Like, through five games, I don't think this team has – and the scores would bear this out — played down to any competition. They haven't been affected by Saturday, in the case of Saturday, the weather or the right conditions. I mean, that was one thing that I took away from that game, is a lot of guys played. The weather was bad. The score was lopsided. The opponent was one that isn't going to raise a lot of eyebrows. The crowd was down a little bit because of that weather.
But props to those who came, because it was not pleasant to be in that stadium.
Thank you very much. But the level of play didn't dip, no matter who was on the field. You didn't see a change, even though the Badgers got to go pretty far down the depth. And that was one of the big takeaways for me, is it's not just the leaders on the team that are they're kind of walking the walk of the things that they're saying about how they're approaching these games, but you're seeing it trickle down through every guy that got on the field.
Yeah, for the defense to maintain a shutout, and that's important to them. You know, they want to keep that zero on the field, but that requires the second line and the third line staying right there at the surface and playing to the expectations that the first string puts out there. And we've seen that they now have 3 shutouts.
I thought it was funny to hear the DBs talk after this game about the frustration that they had, because the guys up front were so effective at getting to the quarterback. The receivers didn't even have a time to get into their routes, where the DBs were having to really work on coverage at all.
Yeah, Hicks was like, man, I can't even get any reps out here, because by the time the quarterback drops back, there's already somebody in his lap.
And he was right. I mean, it was coming from all sides again. So to me, that was a great takeaway, was that it doesn't matter who we're playing. We're going to come out and play the way we know we're capable of.
Things get tougher this week.
Yeah, you look at them, now you're looking at Michigan State coming here, a team we haven't seen in Camp Randall since 2012, which is forever ago, especially when you think about how this these two teams had a really good sort of budding rivalry going, especially with those two games in 2011 where they each won one of them in very dramatic fashion. The 2012 game here went to overtime. They've only met once since then, and that was 3 years ago. So it'll be good to get Michigan State back in here and see the Spartans. And
I'm on the record as saying that they're my hated rival when we did that exercise a couple weeks ago. So I'm really excited for it.
Judging by what we've seen so far this year, I think you will probably hate this team too because they look like the type of group that is going to make things difficult for Wisconsin with the defense that they've been able to play the last three quarters of the Ohio State game last week, notwithstanding. But on the whole, what they've been able to do defensively is going to be a challenge for Wisconsin.
Michigan State has always been a very physical football team under D'Antonio, both offensive line, defensive line, that they want to control that line of scrimmage. And so that's going to be a good test to see how Wisconsin holds up against that. They had a similar test against Northwestern, and the results were, I would say, inconclusive, right? That there were times when Wisconsin didn't look dominant, but they did win the game comfortably. So with an assist from the defense, of course, in that game. But so Michigan State's going to bring that physicality. They're also going to bring probably the best quarterback that Wisconsin has faced this year so far in Lewicki. He's kind of a dual threat. He can run the ball and pass. So if Fayon Hicks wanted a test.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Those guys are going to get their chance this week, I think.
Yeah, and then also to see how Michigan State can hold up to Jonathan Taylor and Wisconsin's rushing attack. You mentioned last week they got gashed on the ground, but Ohio State's doing that to everybody. Ohio State ran for 323 yards on Michigan State, which is an unheard-of total against the Spartans.
Yeah, basically doubled their season total that Michigan State had given up. And we have the luxury, the team doesn't, of being able to look ahead. And I think that, to me, that game Saturday in Columbus was probably more telling about what Ohio State is than necessarily what Michigan State is.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that game.
So don't discount the Michigan State defense that's coming in here because of what Ohio State was able to do to them on Saturday.
They held Arizona State to 76 yards rushing, Indiana to 70, Western Michigan to 67, and Tulsa to minus 73 yards rushing.
Right. Yeah. Remember when the Badgers were like, how could we not be the number one rushing defense in America? Oh, well, it's because Michigan State held an opponent to 73 yards negative rushing.
So Michigan State, good team in the Big Ten. Let's talk about the landscape of the Big Ten broad right now. Ohio State might be the best team in the country. What they've done so far, they're not ranked number one, but they very well could be.
I think a lot of that is based on the preseason rankings coming in. I think if you really put all that stuff aside about where they started the season, I'd have a hard time not putting them number one.
Which is what's great about the CFP rankings when they come out, because they start from scratch a few weeks into the season. They don't take what the preseason rankings were and just say, well, Clemson and Alabama, they're 1-2, so we'll keep them there. They take what you've done this season so far and rank the teams based off of that. So that will be interesting to see when that comes out.
Okay, so we know Ohio State, right? No known commodity for sure.
Right.
My question is, on the West side for the Badgers, can you win this division with two losses? Because Iowa already has one. Nebraska already has one. Minnesota's undefeated and the Badgers are undefeated. Can you win this division with two losses?
Right. So Iowa's got Penn State at home this weekend. Penn State's undefeated. That's a big-time matchup.
Primetime game. And those two teams have traditionally played each other very tightly.
Right. Yeah. Nebraska goes up to Minnesota. Minnesota is, they're giving credit. They're 5-0. They're winning. They're beating the teams that they're supposed to beat.
Speaking of hated rivals.
But they haven't, they haven't played a blue-chip team. And I'm not saying Nebraska is that necessarily, but Nebraska will give them a good battle up in Minneapolis. There's no doubt about that.
And where the Badgers have left no doubt in their five wins, for the most part, Minnesota's have been largely
squeaky.
Tenuous. Yeah,
they're squeaking by.
Right.
So, can you win it with two? That's interesting. That's an interesting question because let's just say for argument's sake that Wisconsin's not going to be able to win at the Horseshoe at Ohio State in a couple weeks. Hopefully I'm wrong, but let's just say they can't win that one. Do they have room to slip up somewhere else, or do they have to remain perfect? So that's where Saturday's game against Michigan State. Do you have a margin of error that you could lose a game like that and still win the West? I don't know.
That's the genesis of the question. Because
I'm not sure.
You look at how the crossover games for the Western for the teams from the West, the crossover games are pretty unbalanced. So you've got the Badgers.
Who's Minnesota playing the crossover?
Not Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan like the Badgers have for a threesome. So
you got Penn State at home. That's the tough one.
Right. And Rutgers.
Right. That's their crossover.
So you look at the Badgers. Okay, well, you've already checked off one box. You've beaten Michigan, but now you've got two of the other heavyweights from that side still yet to go. And that's where that question comes into me is, can you win it with two? Not saying the Badgers are going to lose two, but
Right. But if you're going to lose two, you better win. You better beat Iowa and Minnesota when you play them then. That's what's going to give you that room for error and you got tiebreaker. Let's move on. Trending topic number two. Volleyball had a humongous weekend. Congrats to Kelly Sheffield and his unit. That was awesome. Two top five wins in the same week, including going to Nebraska, number two Nebraska, and shutting them out, sweeping them 3-0. They've only won there one other time. And so that's a huge victory for them, coming on the heels of beating Penn State at the Fieldhouse in a really exciting match.
Sort of the volleyball equivalent of going into the Horseshoe and getting a win, you know?
No doubt.
To go to Lincoln and sweep Nebraska.
Yes, they have a history against Nebraska. You know, their coach, John Cook's a former Wisconsin coach, and so there's definitely a rivalry there. Man, that postgame locker room must have been fun after they won at Nebraska.
Crazy.
It's funny that you guys say that, because I think that the team's outlook is probably more like, great, move on. They're expecting themselves to beat those top 10 teams. They've done it before. They're a top 15 team. They expect out of themselves to be able to go in there and do that with those teams. Kelly Sheffield was cracking me up in the press conference because he was not really into the questions about, like, hey, how did it feel to go in there? And he was like, no, like, you don't get confidence from big wins. You get confidence from how you're playing in those big wins.
And in fairness to him, maybe it shouldn't come as a surprise, because this is a team that's played in the Sweet 16 six straight years. So it's not like this is not like something new for Wisconsin volleyball.
But they were playing in a place that they have not won traditionally.
Nobody wins traditionally.
Good point. And they trailed in every set of that match, but came back to win every set and sweep them. I mean, that
to me is the crazy thing.
That was a statement, and kudos to them if they're putting this like, hey, don't put it away, move it on, because they do have to move on. They've got tough games coming up. In fact, number seven Minnesota comes to the Fieldhouse this weekend. So they don't have a lot of time to rest on their laurels. But I wonder what has changed. So they started the season 4-4. Granted, the four losses were all to very, very good teams, but they go from 4-4 to now they're undefeated in the Big Ten and beating the Big Ten's best.
From my understanding, Sydney Hilly is a big part of that. Kelly Sheffield calls her the compass of the team, which I love. I think what the difference maker in this last game was that she opened up a lot more options for more than just Dana Redke. It's funny anecdote from the game. So you know how I know you brought up that Nebraska, big rival for volleyball.
Tough place to play.
Yep. Yeah. So most places where you go, they put the parent section right behind the team. Pretty much everywhere for pretty much every sport.
Sure. For the visiting
typically.
Team?
Yeah. This one, they put our parents up in the nosebleed. And so
we didn't have any seats behind the bench?
No. Not from what I understand.
Hello.
So that's a nice move.
Some gamesmanship.
A little bit. And our parents kind of let them have it. You know, we get up and that place was dead silent. And our parents are up in the nosebleed just causing havoc. They're like beating on the walls. They brought all their noisemakers. They did what they had to do to send a message, which I just love.
Okay, so if the team's trying to act like it's been there before, the parents certainly don't have to. So kudos to them for reveling in it.
That's awesome. All right, trending topic number three. Let's move on. Jonathan Taylor, are you kidding me? I mean, just when he reaches the point where you're like, wow, there's nothing else to say. This guy's really good. Look at the stats. Look at the numbers. Look at what he's doing. Then he does what he did Saturday, and he scores five touchdowns. He breaks a guy's ankles on a juke move in the hole that was absurd. He shows off every aspect of his game. Brian, you've been like diving into the numbers here on what he's done through five games. He's putting together a historic, by his standards,
right,
historic season.
Right. You mean you look up and he's got 16 touchdowns already on the year, and we're five games in. And the last guy to do something like that was Ricky Williams in 1998 for Texas. The year he won the Heisman Trophy, he had 20 touchdowns in his first five games. So JT's in that kind of company in terms of scoring, which is a great addition to the statistical case you make for him and why he's so great, because he's always had the yardage, right?
How many touchdowns did he have last year?
17 total.
Wow. Interesting.
Right. Which, going back and looking through some of these numbers, you know, you think, okay, 16 touchdowns. Well, Herschel Walker, not the year he won the Heisman, the year before, he only had 17 touchdowns. Only, I say only, but you know, like 16 touchdowns for a season is a big number, and this guy's done it in five. So to see him add the scoring numbers to his statistical arsenal on top of the rushing yards, because don't forget, he's 84 yards away from joining the 5,000-yard club, which only three players have ever done before the end of their junior season.
Ron Dane.
Yes.
And Herschel?
And Herschel. And LaMichael James of Oregon actually got there. He got to 5,000 in the Rose Bowl.
So how many games has Jonathan Taylor played?
He's played 32.
Okay.
So
where is that and how fast has he done it?
So Herschel went over 5,000 for his career in his 33rd game, which JT will have the opportunity to do.
Hopefully
against a very good Michigan State defense, but has that chance on Saturday. The interesting thing to me is, though the games could potentially end up being the same number of games to reach 5,000, JT's carried 706 times going into this Saturday's game. Herschel Walker, going into the game where he, into his 33rd game, had carried it 962 times. So you want to talk about...
Five games into his junior season?
He'd already carried it 962 times.
I mean, that's a different era. They talk now. If you get 20 carries or so, people are wondering, like, do you put too much work on your running back?
Right, but that you look at a difference of 250 carries, that's a full season for a starting running back. So, not to diminish what Herschel did anyway, because I mean he is the gold standard. But I mean, my goodness,
but JT's that home run hitter. That's the that's the difference, that he's hitting those home run. I mean, every game he's got one where you have to watch every snap when he's on the field,
for sure.
So Saturday was another example of that. One of the things that I've been really admiring him for this season is he's talked about wanting to develop as an all-around back and to show off that he can do this and that and everything that he wants to put on tape for NFL scouts moving forward. And he's doing it. He's really clearly turned himself into an all-around back. The way he can catch the football. There were a couple passes on Saturday that were not right in his hands, that he had to make a play, either reaching back for it or catching it when it's not right in your catch radius. And then after the catch, he's able to turn. There was a little swing pass from about the 14-yard line that he took. The coaching staff is finding ways to get him in space because they put a little swing route out to the flat for him. And he just turned the corner, hit the speed, and no one could catch him.
Right, and the catches, you talk about the ball not necessarily being right where it had to be, those aren't catches he makes last year.
Right.
You know, as a guy who watched him try to catch a lot of balls in practice and then a little bit in games, like that's not a catch he makes last year. So you can see the jump that he's made.
And speaking of jumps, the jump cuts that he's making, he's showing the ability to make players miss. We already knew he had the vision. We already knew he had the speed. And he's putting his name in the conversation of the best we've ever seen.
And that's where the idea of this bringing running back Heisman campaign that we've got underway for him came from, that he is a throwback to the days of the great running back in college football.
And we're lucky enough around here that we're spoiled. We've seen such ridiculous running backs. So when we see 16 touchdowns through five games, like, yeah, but Monty Ball just did that. It doesn't just happen. And what we're seeing is pretty special. We had a chance to talk to him on the pod. Junior All-American, the guy who's bringing running back, Jonathan Taylor. JT, thanks for being with us. Hey, what does bringing running back mean to you? This Heisman campaign around you, what does that mean to you?
I think it really means where the running back position used to be. Especially at the next level, you see a lot of young backs kind of holding out and wanting to, in their sense, in their eyes, get what they're worth. And, you know, you can see it in ways. Running backs, they do a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, you got to know the protections. You got to protect the quarterback. You got to know the blocking schemes. You got to be able to run. You got to be able to make people miss. You got to be able to catch the ball. I mean, there's multiple things we have to do. And not to say there's not multiple things that other positions have to do, but, you know, kind of a position where guys now are saying, hey, you can plug and play anybody and, you know, you'll still come out with the win. But in a sense, you don't get that kind of dynamic with some guys. You know, you for example, Melvin Gordon, you take a Melvin Gordon out of a Chargers offense. Yeah, they won some games, they lost some games, but you just still don't get that dynamic with Melvin Gordon in there.
So do you think the running back position's been devalued a little bit?
I think it has. I mean, and I think the only reason why it has been, in a sense, devalued is because it was valued so heavily back in the day. So maybe there needs to be a kind of a balance now. I mean, before, maybe it was, don't want to say overvalued, but I mean, it was just run. Like, that was the thing. So then once people started saying, hey, I mean, we can score passing the ball as well, then they – it kind of started falling off a little bit.
So, is that a trickle down then from the NFL, where the NFL's become such a passing league that it trickles down to college too, where it's all about quarterbacks and less about what the running back brings to the game?
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, a trickle down effect. I mean, once they started changing, like, hey, I mean, you know, we want to get down the field fast, we're going to save time, oh, let's pass the ball. Then it started going down into college. So like, hey, if they're doing this at the next level, let's prepare our guys for the next level, pass, pass, pass. So, you know, and it trickles all the way down. Then you look at high school. Now a lot of high schools are running a bunch of spread. Even my high school used to be, we used to run a full house set with three running backs in the backfield, two running backs and a fullback. And then slowly we started switching the spread. So it definitely trickles all the way down.
And that's why you came to Wisconsin, right? Because here you can still get 35 carries a game.
You definitely can.
So the genesis of like the thought behind this bring in running back campaign was kind of birthed out of the fact that only quarterbacks win the Heisman these days. I mean, that's what it seems like. That's what is it, 8 of the last 10 or something have been quarterbacks?
Yeah, and the only running backs have been Alabama guys who've won the national title.
Right. So, to speaking to your point about devaluing the running back, it seems like running backs don't even get a shot anymore. Melvin Gordon has a legendary season, and Marcus Mariota beats him out. So, that it's kind of we've had kind of fun kind of trying to steer this that, like, hey, don't forget about the running backs. Like, there's JT's doing things that are legendary compared to the greats before whom who have won. Do you follow that? Are you paying attention to the Heisman race at all about maybe what quarterbacks are doing or where your legacy is starting to build?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's tough, you know, especially when you got talented guys at quarterback. They touch the ball every single play. So every play, they have a chance to make something happen. So that's why it's really tough.
I think, you touch the ball every play too, just about.
And I think especially guys, dual threat guys, not even dual threat guys, you know, like, but just like Jalen Hurts, Justin Fields, Tua, like just guys touching the ball every play who are talented, it's tough. So the only thing you can do, and which was told to me by, Bryce Love and Baker Mayfield, those guys who've been in that situation, was just go out there and try to win games. Your hard work, your talent, all of that accumulate together and everything will fall into place.
That's true. I mean, the two Alabama running backs that you mentioned, Brian, that have won.
Right. It's, for them, it was largely based on winning because statistically, they, well, had great, you know, good seasons. They weren't like what you'd referenced in 2014 with Melvin and almost 2,600 yards. So
you just name dropped a couple guys. So you've had a chance to talk to Bryce Love and Baker Mayfield and a bunch of legends. Is anybody like star? Do you get starstruck by anybody right now?
No, yeah. I'm a fan as well. Anytime you have a Saturday game, you're always looking to see who's playing on Friday night because everybody loves college football. So you want to watch other people play. You want to watch other teams. So you definitely do enjoy meeting these other people. And I think that's the biggest thing is you make connections too. Guys, you exchange information, and then now you have a line of communication.
So how much time do you spend staying in touch with kind of your contemporaries in the game right now?
Oh, I do spend some time, especially when I get a moment. Or maybe sometimes in the evening, I'll say, hey, like, good job last week. Or, hey, are you healthy? Make sure you stay healthy. Can't wait to see you this week. Or you guys got a tough one this week. Should be a great challenge for you. So, you know, just from time to time, whenever I get some free time, I like to stay in touch.
So, like, who are you talking to?
Oh, I'm talking to guys like DeAndre Swift, Travis from Clemson. You know, and I guess they're mostly everybody's running backs. But, you know, that's what you do. When you're a running back, you like to stay in touch. And you like watching other running backs because you like watching them make plays.
So what's the biggest name in your phone right now? If we scroll through your contacts, what's the name? Oh, you got his phone number?
Reggie.
Reggie Bush?
Reggie or Ron. They both goats. They're both goats, so I don't know.
What was it like spending time with Reggie? He seemed like he was as impressed with you as you were with him.
He looks like he can play right now still. Like, so that's, I can tell that he still hits the gym. But the biggest thing was he's really, I want to say, like, up to date. I don't want to say up to date, but, you know, displaced from the game, separated from the guys who are still playing right now. He's, like, the most displaced from the game who is closest in years to me, I would say.
Sure.
Besides the guys who are still playing right now. So I think just being able to get information from him is, especially a legend that he is, it's an honor just because I don't think he's not going out meeting everybody. So for him to want to take the time out to meet with me, I think that was an honor.
Come to Madison, not only. Yeah.
Have you been surprised at all by when because you and I have been pretty fortunate to make a lot of trips to these award shows and things. Have you been surprised by how much some of the older guys know about you and your game? Because, you know, I think about Larry Johnson at the Doak Walker Award, or Herschel Walker, you've had the chance to meet him at the ESPN award show. Like, that those guys know you and know your game, is there a wow factor to that to you?
Yeah, it is. Like I said, you know, everybody watches college football. Like I said, there's a lot of talented guys, not only in the Big Ten, but in every conference. So to find out that they're tuning in whenever the Badgers are playing and are watching me and watching the team is definitely an honor, because those guys are some of the best to ever do it. And to have them want to tune in to us is something special.
You're a student of the game, right? Like, you really won't pay attention and try and learn the intricacies. Do you have former guys that you watch specifically? Like, do you go seek out clips of Herschel Walker or Reggie Bush or current contemporaries like Travis Etienne? Do you do that?
Yeah, and especially within our system, we are in the passing game, we watch a lot of James White. Run game, we watch a lot of Melvin Gordon. I mean, of course, some of Melvin's runs were, you know, him just being what Melvin does. He's just super talented. But just how we read certain plays that we run now, watching him. But I do watch other guys, like I said, like Travis and those guys. I'm tuned in if they're playing on a Friday night or even a Saturday night and we have an 11 o'clock game. I'm tuned in because I like watching plays. I like watching running backs be explosive. And those guys, they're some of the best to do it.
So I thought it was interesting when you – remember the conversation you did with Joe Thomas that we taped a couple over the summer? And after that was over, you guys were riding on a golf cart. There was a golf outing out at U Ridge, and you guys were riding back on a golf cart together. And as you're walking away, no cameras around, nobody around except the two of you, but I kind of overheard it. You were asking him, what makes it successful for an offensive lineman? What can the running back do to help an offensive lineman do his job better? You were asking him that. Why did you ask Joe Thomas a question like that?
Well, because I know he was a great offensive lineman here, one of the greatest ever. So he's definitely talented, but also I just wanted to know, complementing his talent, what would a running back do to just make his job that much easier? Because if you have a talented offensive line and you have a running back who's trying to make their job easier, you have talent. Like, you get what I'm trying to say here? You have a talented offensive lineman with an easy job, which means it's going to be success. There's going to be success on that play.
I just thought it was cool that you were genuinely wanted to know, How can I work together with the O-line better? Like, this isn't about me. This is about how can we be successful together? Not that you get to play with Joe Thomas. That would be unfair.
But, you know, we've heard John Settle say it. We've heard Joe Rudolph say it about how your desire to know well beyond your role in the offense and wanting to keep learning more and more about the big picture is part of what makes you special. And we always hear that there's no such thing as the perfect rep. What's the closest you've come to that in a game that you can think of?
Definitely this year, the South Florida game. You know, we talked through the film with Coach Settle on that Sunday. And, you know, whenever you have a good game, that's when he has to grade tough. He was like, I searched through. He said, but I found something. And that's what you want. And we always talk about whenever you're able to make corrections after a win, then it's a good thing, because you know there's still something you have to work on and you know you haven't arrived yet.
Okay, so what's the closest you've gotten to that perfect rep? Whether it's something you did or you did in concert with the O-line, like, is there a play that sticks out in your mind like, man, we got that one right?
I mean, it really depends on the play. I mean, there's a lot of plays where, you know, we have a fullback leading through and Stocky just crushes the guy and you cut right off of Stocky and then you make somebody miss. I mean, there's a lot of things that accumulates. You know, you need the wide receivers blocking. So to have a perfect rep, I think you need everybody all together. Because if you're having a perfect rep and someone else isn't, then the whole play will kind of throw it off, because then you're needing to do something that you wouldn't normally do. So you need everybody to be on for a perfect rep. You need everybody to have a perfect rep for it to be the perfect play.
On Saturday, did it start to get easy? I mean, 5 touchdowns, it seemed like almost every time you touch the ball, it's whoop, he's in the end zone.
No, I think the coaches put together a really, really good game plan, and also being able to make adjustments through the game. Coach Settle always talks about that, is when you're able to make adjustments mid-game, I mean, that's a good thing, because you're able to keep the defense on their heels. They're not getting too comfortable. They're not getting complacent and saying, okay, when we get this look, we know what's coming. So you're able to keep them playing honest and having to defend the whole field.
Can you, can you give us an example of something you changed Saturday? Like you saw something and moved it?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, you get guys trying to clog up the middle. So when you have the wrapper pulling around, you press it inside and then you bounce outside.
Or you just break some guy's ankles in the hole, huh? You seen that clip?
You got to find a way.
JT, have you seen that clip?
Yeah, we watched it in the film.
What did the running backs room do when you guys watched that clip?
Coach Settle just says, this is what we're talking about, gentlemen. You got to find a way. You got a guy standing in the hole. You have to win those one-on-one matchups.
I mean, stop. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen it yet, you got to find a way on Twitter to find this clip. It's one of the nastiest jukes I've seen. It was like Madden elite level juke.
Okay, so there's not been a perfect rip, but there have been lots of really good ones. Obviously, you've scored 16 times this year. What's the story with the touchdown celebration you guys have this year?
You've been getting a lot of practice of it.
Yeah.
So every year, of course, you guys know it's been a long tradition. The running back group has a touchdown celebration that everybody can do. This year it was, you know, we're going into work. We're going into this game. We're going to work all 60 minutes until the clock hits zero. So every time we can get in the end zone, it's like a, you know, thank you for coming in today. You know, good work today. So I think that's the biggest thing. We know that every single game you're going to have to work. So you got to have that mentality of clocking in.
So it's a handshake, right? Like you're shaking everybody's hand. What's the other part of it?
You can do anything. You can put on a suit jacket. Okay. You can fix your tie. You can pick up your briefcase. But just something that represents you going into work.
I love that.
Who came up with it?
Groshek came up with the handshake. He said, how about we just do a handshake? And then I came up with the jacket or the tie or the briefcase.
Got to look good doing it, clearly. You can't just go to work. You got to look good.
You're not a super flashy guy, though, you don't strike me at. Like, you're kind of quiet, you know? You kind of go about your business. So that celebration seems like it would suit you pretty well, that you're kind of business-like. When's the last time you got mad? Like, that you were, like, because I never see you're no. Super chill.
I can't think of
which is a
ever
strength of yours. But have you gotten mad?
Sometimes, like, I think Jack slid one play, and I think the guy called him soft or something, and I was like, he's a quarterback. Relax. I just told him to relax and said he's a quarterback.
Wait, no. Telling somebody to relax doesn't mean mad.
That's as mad as you get. Come is on. Telling somebody to relax?
I mean, yeah, I was like, man, relax. Like, he's a quarterback. I was kind of annoyed. Like, how are you going to call a quarterback soft for sliding? Like, and you're a safety, you're supposed to be – other than the corner, other than the linebackers, you're supposed to be the ones who can tackle. You know, corners don't usually tackle, but I don't know.
Do you talk during the games? Because we had Chris Orr in that chair a couple weeks ago, and he told us about. Oh, yeah.
He does.
He does a lot. Do you talk much?
No, I don't really talk too much. Besides that one time, talking to the quarterback, calling him soft, and he just slid. I mean, what did you want him to do? Did you want him to try to run you over? Why would a quarterback try to run you over?
It's hard to talk to people when you're running away from them, isn't it? Your last name on the back of your jersey as you fly by. So, okay, I got another question about this. You're a competitive guy, I'm sure. Do you get annoyed that you don't get to play the fourth quarter of games?
No, actually, sometimes, though, you get to watch the other guys in the running back room do their thing. I mean, I love watching the Kia run. He runs hard, and I love seeing him run pads out. I always love seeing Showtime Shaw get in the game because it seems like he can break. He'll get one carry for 50 yards and a touchdown while, cutting the run back. So, I don't know. He's the only one that can do that. It seems like every time he gets the ball, he's able to hit the cutback and have a big gain, and I don't know how he does it, but it's just Showtime Shaw.
I mean, you – like, every time we ask you a question, you turn it back to the team. That's sort of your MO. So, clearly, you're a team-first guy. And I don't think it's, you know, people think that can be cliche. Clearly, it's not contrived with you. Like, you are a team-first guy. You've always been that way. But what about being vocal as a leader? Because I think that's something that was new to you this year. Was that hard for somebody who has a quiet personality? Or what was that process like for you when, you know, the year kind of flipped over and, okay, this is my team now?
Yeah, luckily I had guys like Dakota Dixon was a great leader, probably one of the best I've been around. Chris Orr this year, TJ Edwards. So just having those guys around, and actually I was kind of able to just sit back and observe and, you know, just find my kind of style of leadership and vocalism. And I think having those guys there definitely helped me. And I think if they weren't there, it would have definitely been tougher to become more vocal, but it made it a little bit easier having those guys in front of me.
Has there been a time where you spoke up and everybody kind of snapped to attention like, oh, okay, JT?
Yeah, so we usually do like the message before we eat dinner at the hotel. And
on a Friday?
Yeah, on a Friday. And I had went one time. And usually, like this year, the first few times it was Chris. And that was my first time going up. So, you know, after I was finished, everyone was like, oh, okay, JT. So, I'm pretty sure everyone was thinking, like, what was I doing standing up, going up there at first? And then once I finished, they was like, man, like, okay, I see where JT is coming from now.
So what was the
what
message?
What game was it and what was the message?
The game was Michigan.
I knew it was Michigan. Mm. Uh-huh. That's what 35-0 gets you.
And I think that the message was really, you know, it's not good enough. Obviously, the things that we've done so far, which is fine, is not good enough. And, you know, just pointing out a couple players and the plays that they made, that were some really good plays that average players wouldn't make, and just telling them to realize that a lot of people don't think that's good enough. So obviously we have to do more.
Can you do me a favor and talk to the team before the Ohio State game? I'm not looking ahead, but I'm just trying to plan your life a little bit for you. Okay. You okay with that?
I'm okay.
You're a thinker, obviously, the way you talk and the things that you talk about and process. You're studying philosophy here at UW. Is there something that you've learned that kind of grabbed you, that you made you think, oh, that, wow, now that resonates with me?
Really, a lot of the times you might be in a situation and someone might make a decision and you start scratching your head like, why in the world, why would they do that? And then you start realizing that emotion is one of the most powerful forces in the universe, because you can say a question a certain way or have a situation, and then you can reword it just a little bit, and someone will completely flip their choice or their decision based on how you reworded it.
So that to me would help you be a leader, like understanding those nuances of, because everybody can be coached differently, everybody can be led differently, everybody's got different personalities and different emotions. So do you think, learning things like that, does that help you in the locker room and with your teammates?
Definitely. I think you just have to understand what the situation is. You know, you could be trying to talk to a guy after something happened, but you have to realize that situation just happened. So he's probably feeling these kind of emotions, or he probably feels like this, or maybe something happened before that situation. So he had an emotion bottled up inside before that minor situation that made him blow up.
I wasn't surprised to hear that you are somebody who's really bought into this mindfulness practice that the team is using a little bit more this year, but it's something you've been doing for a couple of years, but really put an emphasis on this year. I wasn't shocked to hear that you were somebody who really bought into it with the way you think and the way you think about how people think. How has that helped you? And is there a way that it applies to game day for you?
Yeah, I think mindfulness is just a way to be able to refocus and be where you are right now. Sometimes being a Division I athlete, your mind can run and wander in all different types of directions. So mindfulness is a way of being able to focus your thoughts in on one specific aspect, one specific thing. Once you realize that your mind is wandering, that's the biggest thing. Is mindfulness is realizing that your thoughts are everywhere and being able to bring that center of attention back.
I've heard you talk about it in practical sense that as a freshman, maybe after the play is called and you're standing there waiting, what your mind was doing as a freshman to what it is now, and how mindfulness in particular has helped. Can you explain that? What that story of freshman to now in your mind?
Yeah, freshman year is definitely, especially when you're thrown in, you're playing freshman year. So now you have to really think about everything you just learned. You came in the summer and you tried to learn everything from June until September, and you're thinking of every single coaching point you just had. It's your first game, not even just your first game, but just throughout that season. And every time a play is called, you're running through like every single step of the play, every single thing you're supposed to do. And then as you get older, once they call certain plays, you kind of understand what is understood about the play. You know, okay, I already know this is seven-man protection, so you already know that you basically have one man. That's the biggest thing is whenever you get older and you're within a system, you start understanding the things that the coaches think are understood from the play.
We've heard a lot of people talk from the outside, and even your coaches talk about how much you've changed as a player for over these 3 years you've been here. How do you think you've changed? Like, how are you different now than you were as a freshman in 2017?
I think really being more efficient with my movements, more compact. A lot of the times, freshman year, you could start running a little wild, but I think, you know, as I got older, really just having efficient movements, not really doing too much, being able to go from point A to point B efficiently and patiently.
What about off the field? Like, how are you a different person?
I think off the field, really getting more involved in the community as far as, you know, with the teammates or, you know, maybe like Badgers give back. Well, I think one of the biggest things is freshman year, you're in a new environment, 14, 15 hours away from home. So really you're here and I'm focusing on school and football and not really worried about the outside life. But, you know, as you get older, you realize, you know, in order to be completely healthy, you need to have a social life and you need to be able to do things that you enjoy.
Okay, I think we could – let's do a public service here. We have some fans that maybe could use this breathing and this mindfulness. So is there a simple trick that we can tell people when the game's getting intense or you're getting mad, like you want to throw a brick at your TV because something didn't go right, because you guys have learned, like, breathe in four – hold five. What is that? let's give people just a little bit of mindfulness that they can take when the game's maybe stressing them out.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, like you just said, have you came to a session before?
I have. I've sat in.
Yeah, the 4-5-6 breath. Yeah.
What is that?
That's when you breathe in for 4 seconds, you hold it for five, and then exhale for six. Yes. Yeah.
So what does that look like?
So to be, you breathe in for four, over five. Except for six.
And what does that do? What does that breathing do?
Really, I think what it does is when you're holding for five, you're really bottling everything up. And then once you finally exhale on that six, you're releasing everything you just had bottled up. You're releasing it all, and you're able to reset, and you're able to refocus.
It sounds silly. It really does, but I've tried it, and what I notice it does is when I start holding, my mind starts to go to, oh, I got this appointment, I got to do this, my kids, da da da. But then you have to focus on what you're doing because you have to remember what your breathing technique is, that it brings you right back to, like, I'm breathing right now. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm breathing. I'm not worried about my other appointments. I think that's kind of the idea of mindfulness, is to bring you back. So this is a public service announcement for fans. When things may be getting a little stressful in the game, breathe in four, breathe in, hold five.
And exhale for six.
There it is.
Because JT's probably doing the same thing.
Yes, exactly. Man, you've earned everything you've gotten so far. It's so much fun watching you. Thanks for coming on the pod, man.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Good luck Saturday against Michigan State.
Thank you.
Thanks, JT.
Thank you.
Our thanks again to Jonathan for joining us. Patrick, you and I are beyond lucky that we get to listen to Jonathan speak in a lot of different settings. Today being no exception, I never come away without learning something from him.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's fun.
Just a tremendous person to be around. Also happens to be a tremendous football player, which I think leads directly into the question that we floated to our fans on Twitter and Instagram and behindthebadgers@gmail.com. If you set Ron Dayne aside, who is the greatest player in Wisconsin football history?
Yeah, it was fun reading the thread on Twitter that people were responding to our Twitter handle about this question, and because we have a lot of choices, and it's an impossible task. Okay, obviously it's just opinion based, and everybody will value and think about that question differently. When you say best player, what does that mean? And
right, you can't get people to agree on what it means, let alone
sure
who best fits
it. And I said, how do you compare Joe Thomas to Melvin Gordon? I mean, they their positions are so different, and how they affect the game is so different. But it's a fun exercise just for just for arguing, just to throw things out. That's what Twitter's made for, isn't
and to
it?
Think about some names that maybe you haven't thought about in a while, too.
Yeah, some of the most popular ones we saw. I mean, if we had to do a consensus, I think Melvin Gordon, Joe Thomas, Russell Wilson, he was polarizing on this, but he got a lot. And Jim Leonard. Those are probably the four that kept cropping up the most. But here's some other ones that I pulled out that I really liked. At Madtown91 said, this is the polarizing part. He said, Wilson has absolutely no business being in this conversation. I'm thrilled that he's associated with Bucky, but this needs to be a player who contributed greatness over multiple years. All right, so that's what's interesting about this. I'm not sure I agree that you have to have a legacy, you know, 3-4 years.
I would argue that had he had multiple years, he would have contributed multiple years of greatness.
That's true,
to the team.
And this might have been a silly discussion because he might have been hands down the guy. But that's why this is fun. At Krause in the house said, sorry, but Melvin Gordon last year, I think he means a couple years ago, we had no passing game. Stavi had the yips. McAvoy wasn't a viable QB. Melvin Gordon ran against stacked boxes and almost beat Barry Sanders' single-season rushing record despite missing a full game and a half against LSU. A full game and a half against LSU. Hard to argue. Melvin's up there. Another one, I tweeted back and forth a little bit with Bill T209 about J.J. Watt, and he suggested him, and I said I think that our thoughts on his legacy get skewed a little bit by his NFL success.
Yeah.
And I said, man, if we could have seen a senior year J.J. Watt, that might have changed things because you remember he left a year early, and so he never got to overlap with Russell.
Yeah, and you look at the games the Badgers lost that year.
Exactly.
I like to think that J.J. makes enough of a difference for those defenses that those tight games you lost weren't that tight at the end.
Well, yeah, you just look at the points per game that Wisconsin gave up. They gave 38 points per game in the three games they lost that season. So, yeah, you tell me that he can't make a little bit of a difference. So Brian Lucas, who we work with, is adamant that Russell Wilson has to be the guy for this, that he affected the game and changed the game so much. And I said, I don't know. He said, because that season, we're not even in the games that we lose without him. And I said, well, my counter argument was, can he be the guy on a team that lost three games? I mean, what did they end up having to show for that season other than the Big Ten title game where they beat Michigan State?
I'd say a Big Ten championship is something.
But that game will be remembered for, I think, for opportunity lost.
That season, I mean?
That they lost a heartbreaker to Ohio State and Michigan State and the Rose Bowl, and all of those were like gut punches, severe gut punches. But that's what's fun about this exercise. Matt LePay chimed in. He brought up Jamar Fletcher as a guy who he hadn't seen his name yet. He said he has a lot of interceptions on big stages. He was a clutch player, no doubt. At Badger Local gave us a running back breakdown. This is how spoiled we are. We could do this exercise with just running backs. He said he ranked them Gordon greater than Taylor, Jonathan Taylor, greater than Dane, greater than Monty Ball. That's four guys that on most schools, that's probably any of those four guys is probably your best player in school history.
And the Badgers go even deeper than that at running back.
No doubt. We're sitting in the running back's room, and there's a whole wall of guys like that. What else? Kathy Lobenstein emailed in. She said Mike Webster. Mm. I think that's a good one. He played in an era that's a little bit forgotten.
And he might be a little bit like J.J., too, in that he went on to be such a dominant and outstanding pro.
Like Joe Thomas.
Right, that maybe you factor that into your thinking with his greatness. But no doubt a great player.
And one of the greatest players ever at his position. So how do you... So maybe that is what should get you on this list. Tim Crumry is another one, a defensive tackle that he's like second in school history in tackles as a defensive tackle.
I'm glad you brought him up because in all of my thinking through, okay, who do I think is the best? Like, how would I answer this question? He was the one that jumped out to me that is not the modern, you know, he's not in that modern group because what he did from a numbers perspective is ridiculous. He was a nose guard. He had 444 career tackles. He still has the school record for solo tackles, just short of 300. I mean,
and he's just an awesome dude. He was a defensive line coach when I was working for the Chiefs.
And he would run around practice and just try to beat up the guys on his team.
That's how he talked. He would always lose his voice, and he would jump in the drills and just beat up his defensive lineman and say, if I could do this at my age, there's no reason you can't.
And that's his legacy. He's like the ultimate tough guy. I mean, he started 46 games. He was the MVP of the Independence Bowl, the Badgers' first ever bowl win. I mean, he was a guy in a down era who probably doesn't get appreciated enough for how good he was, although he is a recent College Football Hall of Fame inductee.
So for your money, Tim Crumry is your guy?
No, I said he was one that I factored in that I think a lot of people didn't think about.
So. Can you pick just one?
Can I pick just one? This is where I go back to the basis of the question itself, right? Like, who is the best? Well, Joe Thomas might be the best.
Maybe the best offensive lineman in the history of football. So that's,
exactly. So that factors in. And then I go back to, okay, well, running backs, we've had so many. If you can't even be the best, and I say can't even, like it's some sort of slight, but if you're not the best we've ever had at the position, you can't be the best. So I'm sorry, Monte. I'm sorry, James White. You know, because I keep coming back to Melvin. I'm looking at Jim Leonard and Jamar Fletcher, great DBs. You know, I look at Pat Richter and Lee Evans. You got great receivers. But how do you decide between those? Melvin is the one, and I'm probably biased because I saw so much of it with my own eyes. Right. But his season in 2014, and again, this isn't a one-season deal, but his season in 2014 was transcendent. I mean, it is an all-time great college football season. And then you throw in what he did the previous 2 years. He's
hard to argue. But the guy we just talked to might have something to say about that by the end of his career.
Right. And that's the only reason I don't think I can factor him in is because he's not done yet.
Not done yet. Yeah. I'm going to offer another name that I would make a strong argument for, and that's Erasmus James.
Sure.
Anybody who watched that 2004 season, there were times when he was simply unblockable. I mean, he would just dominate games. And they were undefeated that season when he got injured at Purdue. They beat the number 5 team. That was the Scott Starks scoop and score game. And he gets hurt in that game. And he's not the same. And the team's not the same after that. And they go on to lose the final 3 games of the season, which probably hurts how people remember him and hurts his legacy. But it also speaks to how valuable he was. In those 3 games of the season that they lost to Michigan State. They gave up 49 points. Then they lost to Iowa and gave up 30. And then they lost to Georgia in the bowl game and gave up 24. They, before that, were giving up like 15 points a game.
And going back to the JJ point, I think you can attribute a lot of that to him because that is a position where you can really affect a game.
On every snap.
Right.
So a running back can't, Jonathan Taylor would be mad if I said that. But there are plays where they don't necessarily affect the game. The quarterback probably affects the game on every offensive snap. A defensive lineman can too. No matter if the other team's running the ball or passing the ball, they can have an impact on every
snap.
Which
is why we sit here with this revisionist history that, hey, if JJ had played as a senior, maybe the Badgers are in the national title game in 2011.
Here's another one.
Because they do have that effect.
Tom Burke. You remember Tom Burke was on those Rose Bowl teams? Oh, my goodness. We could talk.
He falls in the numbers perspective, too. Like,
we need a bonus.
Ridiculous.
We need a bonus podcast just to talk about this topic because we could go on for a long time.
So I guess at the end of the day for me, boiling it down, I went to the prestige position at Wisconsin, running back, and I went through who is the best one that has ever done it, Melvin Gordon.
Last one, an email from, I'm going to kill this name. I apologize in advance. Aniruddha Bhargava emailed and said Chris Borland is the one. And just go back and watch his tackle against Northwestern where he dives, or against Nebraska, where he dives over the blocker and just destroys Rex Burkhead. As that he submitted that for evidence is all you need to know. So thanks for everybody who engaged with us and gave their input. It's a fun exercise. We'll come up with another one this week that we can throw out there and give everybody something to argue about.
So who is it for you? I'm not letting you off the hook.
Erasmus James.
Oh, that's your answer.
That's my guy.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go with that.
Wow.
I'm telling you, you weren't here yet.
Doesn't mean I didn't watch him.
I know, but he had it going. All right, what else is happening? What else do fans need to know before we close up this podcast? What do we need to know? On Sunday, the basketball team is going to have their red-white scrimmage. Basketball season is rapidly approaching. They had media day in Chicago last week. Demetric Trice, Brevin Pritzel, Greg Gard represented the team and did a great job. So now at noon on Sunday, free admission, come watch the team. The offense is going to be totally different this year. It's going to be exciting to see how this team develops and grows and forms an identity. You can also meet the team, get autographs afterwards. Orlando Tucker will be available to get autographs, which I think people might forget about that. He's on the coaching staff now.
And we got a new generation of fans probably that weren't going to games when he played.
Who's Orlando Tucker?
get his autograph.
What else is going on?
I'm fired up to see men's hockey open the season. They got to go to BC, ranked 10th in the country, and play at Merrimack, which Brian Posick, the play-by-play guy for the team, was telling me it's going to be a really tough game. They're really physical. And then they get to come back and play open at home against the defending national champion. So I'm excited to see men's hockey get going.
Women's hockey, too. Mark Johnson's on the precipice of his 500th win. They're at Ohio State this week, and if they win both games, he'll get to 500. Just to put that in some perspective, Jeff Sauer, who is like one of the godfathers of hockey, he only had 489 wins in his 20 seasons at Wisconsin, and here Mark Johnson can do it. Mark Johnson, who's averaging 30 wins a year.
And I don't think we can talk women's hockey without flashing back to last weekend. And how cool was the moment for Brian Posick, who is the men's hockey play-by-play voice, was doing a TV game for the Wisconsin women. His daughter, Maddie, scores the first goal of her career in the game with her dad, Brian, on the call. How Kelly, awesome wait, was
can
that?
We have
moment?
That clip.
Yeah, makes everyone cry.
Let's listen
cry.
To that.
Here's Grace Bowlby, and then she got her pocket pick that came to Weiss. Now Posick plays it between her legs, and she'll snap one up and scores. Maddie Posick, her first goal as a Badger. Wisconsin leads 2-0.
And I must point out, my partner is Maddie Posick's dad, and he's a proud guy. After Maddie lights the lamp for the first time in her career, it's 2-0 Wisconsin, and I think that one might go into the Posick family album.
I hope I recorded this.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, that's...
Like I get goosebumps even just like even listening to that.
Brian said on Monday, he said, you know, dumb luck on my part that I get the chance to that game actually to be on TV and I'm calling it, and then she scores in the game, and I said, man, that's not luck. That's meant to be.
Was that the first women's hockey game he'd ever called in his life?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay. But how rare he
Yeah, but he doesn't call many.
Maybe one a year.
Right. I mean,
divine intervention.
Yeah, I think it was meant to be.
What else is going on? Just a reminder, the volleyball team, they host Minnesota this weekend. Come over to the field house if you can. It's like the cheapest ticket in town for the entertainment value. Volleyball at the field out is awesome. So a lot of awesome things happening in Wisconsin sports right now. It's a fun time to be a Badger fan. Thanks for listening to our podcast. Subscribe, rate, review, send us your feedback. Tell us what we're doing wrong. Hopefully not a lot, but we can take it. We want to make this as good as possible. So it's homecoming week. We'll see you Saturday at Camp Randall.
Unless we get fired.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.